You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And we are back on the Oklahoma Drill Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew. And of course, I got my co-host, Matt, here with me. The New York Jets, believe it or not, Matt, are coming off their third straight victory, sitting at 4-2, second place in the AFC East, just like we all assumed before the season, I'm sure. Taking down the Green Bay Packers 27-10 in Lambeau Field. The first time the Packers have lost in the regular season at home in the past 15 contests before this game. The first time Aaron Rodgers has lost at home in Lambeau after a loss, I believe, ever. This is a statement win by the New York Jets. There's no other way to put it. And I think that's where we should start first and foremost by taking this in for what it is. The Jets took down the Green Bay Packers in Lambeau Field handily. This was not a close game. This was not a couple of lucky plays that were the deciding factor. This was an ass whooping by the Jets offensive and defensive lines on the Green Bay Packers. And that's a huge, huge statement to the rest of the league. I think the Jets are for real. They're starting to click. They're starting to have all their young pieces get together. The confidence is through the roof right now. And I bet this team feels like they can take on anyone. And with the way they're playing, it might not be hyperbole.
If they can. Yeah. There's all these narratives after the Miami game, like, oh, we can't beat teams with their starting quarterbacks. And everybody wrote us off and thought, well, there's no way they're going to beat Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers. And guess what? We did. And it really shows the fortitude and the strength of this team to really put themselves in this position. They owe it to themselves. Their hard work has finally paid off. It seems like everybody's kind of finding their groove and finding a way to pull these wins out. And not just like close ones either. We've had 2 3-score games in a row. So this is something to be proud of. This is something to be happy about. And before this game, I mentioned that this is the kind of game that puts us in the conversation to be contenders. You can't look at this team and what they've accomplished so far and say, no, they're most likely going to tank or not make the playoffs or not put out a good showing for the rest of the season. They are comfortably in a position. Now, I think they're the 5th seed if the season ended today. And this is the hard stretch of the schedule. If you believe in that kind of thing, of just looking at the opponents that we've faced so far and the opponents that we will be facing in the second half of the season, we're going through the thick of it right now, and we have a winning record. That is something to talk about.
It really is. No, there was a handful of people that didn't think the Jets were going to win a game before their bye week, before the year started, and that they were going to start the year 0-9 and be already racing for the first pick in the draft. Same old Jets, here we go again. It's been 6 weeks and the Brady Jets have someone irrelevant by the name of Brady, not the more popular guy. definitely some miscalculations there. The Jets have already matched their win total from last season. It's been 6 weeks. That's improvement. That's improvement. That is rounding the corner. That is taking on some of the tougher teams in the NFL, the hardest part of the schedule, like you said, and coming out 4-2 after 6 weeks is better than I think anyone could have hoped for, better than I think anyone would have anticipated. I know we were saying before the season, Matt, that we were hoping for 2-2 at best out of the first four, and that's what we got. And since then, it's been nothing but wins with Miami and Green Bay back to back. I said it before, I'll say it again. This is a statement game. This is a rest of the NFL wake up. It's not a fluke. This is not the Jets got lucky a couple of times. When something happens more than once, as frequently as this is going on, it's not luck anymore. It's a pattern. And I think that's what we're starting to see. There's a pattern that, first off, the Jets are dang good on the road. They are the only team in the AFC to not lose on the road this year, period. That stands for something. After I'm trying to remember correctly, I think their only road win last season was at Houston.
I believe so. And it should be noted that these aren't easy away games either. These are the hardest places to play in the NFL.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Browns' new stadium with all of their hype was definitely a hostile environment. Pittsburgh is historic for being a tough place to play on the road. And there's no better home field advantage in the NFL than Green Bay and Lambeau. And to go 3-0 against those teams handily, quite honestly, and find ways to come out and secure victories, it really says a lot about this team and about what Robert Saleh has done to rebound things. You alluded to it earlier, Matt, about Aaron Rodgers being not, you know, one of these backup quarterbacks. He's about as far from a random backup quarterback as you can get. And yes, was he dealing with a throwing hand injury, a thumb injury? Absolutely. But Rodgers still made a couple of throws in that game that were pristine vintage Rodgers that only he and a handful of other guys could do. It didn't look like to me like they were going against the shell of Aaron Rodgers. I don't think that this was a completely washed, broken down version of a formerly great player. I think Aaron Rodgers is still a very, very good quarterback, and he played that way against the Jets. The problem was, Matt, and this is where we got to start, really, the Jets defense just had their hair on fire from the very first snap. And it was a complete and total domination effort by the entire unit, starting up front with the defensive line. Quinnen Williams is making his all-pro case about as fast as we could hope for. Two sacks in this game, up to five on the season, currently leading the league for defensive tackles and sacks with those five sacks. He had an awesome game. John Franklin Myers got in on the party with a sack. Sheldon Rankins got in with a sack. Carl Lawson, I don't think he registered a sack himself, but he was doing damage on stunts, creating movement for other guys to come free. You know, the defensive line really had their way with this Packers offensive line from the very, very beginning of the game. And I do not think this game looks the way that it does without that effort.
It really doesn't. The best offense for Green Bay all day was probably penalties. I think they had something like 79 yards plus in penalty yardage. That's really what kept them in this game.
And one of them was the Jets coaches on the sideline.
That was ridiculous.
One of them wasn't even the defense.
This defense is exactly what we kind of envisioned this defense could be, especially with the pass rush. We were salivating at the idea of Lawson and Quinnen and Franklin Myers and JJ and everybody else on the edge, rotating in and out, fresh legs, coming after passers all game. And it's kind of coming, it's been coming to fruition the last couple of days, couple of weeks, where this team has been coming after the quarterback and bunches too, not just a few times here and there, and in clutch situations. How many third down sacks or tackle for losses there were, but there were quite a few. And so they're not just making an impact, they're making an impact in clutch situations, and they really can't say enough about that.
No, you can't. And it goes back to what this coaching staff has said, you know, pretty much since they've been here, which is you got to find the guys that put on when it's crunch time. And when the game is on the line and you get in those third down situations, that's where games are won and lost in the NFL, is third down in the turnover margin. And for this team, again, second straight week on offense with no turnovers, you have a defense that's able to generate turnovers and a fumble recovery. That's always going to be a help. And then, like you said, coming up clutch on third down with big plays, we saw some great play out of Sauce Gardner in this game. Another excellent game from him on what is appearing to be a defensive rookie of the year pace with how he's playing. Nearly had a pick six on the first drive, inches away from being a pick six to open the game. You know, he's playing out of his mind. I could sit here and talk about Sauce all day. And the fact that he ends it by walking out of Lambeau with a cheese head on and seemingly carried it with him indefinitely. He probably still is holding on to the thing right now as we record. That's elite level cornerback trolling. And there, it feels so good as a fan of this team to be the team that's getting to puff your chest out in the other team's stadium, especially against a team like the Packers. This is Sauce is like, I really can't explain how good he is this fast.
It really doesn't make any sense either.
No, I knew he was talented. We both knew he was talented. We both knew that we thought he would make a good transition, fit the scheme and all of that. But he is so aware of what's going on around him. That's what's impressed me the most with him, is that his field vision and his awareness, his route recognition. I don't think I've seen him fooled once this season. Where has there been a single time where you can remember where Sauce Gardner's covering somebody and he just gets absolutely routed up and is not even in the same area code as the receiver he's trying to recover? Because I don't think it's happened. No.
I know that PFF attributes one touchdown to him. I think it was on just a miscommunication. But I haven't seen him get like completely burned by anybody yet.
No, I really don't think it's happened. And if he continues this pace, we're probably going to be talking about him as one of the best cornerbacks in the league by the end of the year. And it's crazy to say that about a rookie, but that's the type of play he's having right now. I believe from what I was seeing yesterday, he's had 40 total coverage snaps in man coverage, and he's only been targeted 6 times and given up 1 catch.
That's a little ridiculous.
Yeah. And going against some premier receivers as well. Obviously, you had Mark Andrews, Rashad Bateman, week one with the Ravens. You had Amari Cooper with the Cleveland Browns. You had the Bengals and all of their strong receivers, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, the whole crew. Pittsburgh had a great group. Sauce was the only guy on our defense that could stop George Pickens that day. The Dolphins, we had talked about the Dolphins and their skill talent. Tyreek Hill leading the league in receiving. And you get to Green Bay. Not the most incredibly talented receiving group as maybe it had been in years past, but when you're going against quote unquote lesser competition, you should go out and dominate. And that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, it was quite impressive. And before, when I said it doesn't make sense, I mean more what he's able to do physically. He's 6'4", and the change of direction that he has and the fluidity he has is so impressive. And wild. Like I can't, this is hard to do for cornerbacks that are maybe like 5 or 6 inches shorter than him, never mind a guy at his size. It's truly impressive. And you match that with what our defensive line is doing, and you can see why it's so hard to really move against this defense, whether it's a backup quarterback in Miami or a future Hall of Famer in Aaron Rodgers. These quarterbacks are having a hard time. I think it should be noted that the linebackers probably had their best game in the last couple of years. I haven't seen these guys fly around and make tackles like that in a very long time. It seemed like every time there was a hole opening up, somebody was in there to thwop them right in the gut and stop them for nothing. It looked like one of those like slingshots with a watermelon just like coming back at their faces. They would just get downed right away, whether it was CJ, whether it was Quincy. Quan was amazing also. These guys showed all three levels. Everybody came to play. And I don't think that we have the performance that we had yesterday without them.
No, not at all. And I'm going to echo everything you just said and go a little bit further and say, hats off Quincy Williams. To come off an injury that looked as bad as it did, to only miss two games, to get back on your first opportunity coming off on the road, going against a tough running team like the Packers with some really good running backs in their backfield, and to just be de-cleating people all day long, to just be coming downfield with reckless abandon, like the heat-seeking missile that we all know he can be, and putting people in the dirt. I mean, he suplexed Aaron Jones on an inside run earlier in the game. And that was just the beginning of what was a incredible effort from Quincy. He's having a quietly really good season. He's still waiting for, you know, the plays in coverage to really start clicking, but I don't think he's been a liability necessarily. I don't think he's been getting completely and totally picked on. And the way he's attacking in the run game, the misses are gone. Last year it was, Quincy's so good, he's so fast, he's so explosive, and he's such a hard hitter. And when he guesses right and he comes downhill and the play is right and, you know, it's a big play and he blows it up. And then there's the other times where he guesses wrong and he's out of the position, he's in the wrong gap, and the offense gets a huge run because of it. Not this year. He is seeing what's in front of him and he is striking people with authority. And I just got to tip the cap to him, because the improvement from last year to this year was already incredible, but to keep the pace after a serious injury and come out like an absolute madman in your first game back, that's really impressive.
Yeah. He's just seeing the field very well. He's taking great angles. He's sifting through linemen and the mesh up front. He's got that same power. It's almost like that injury never happened. When we saw him in that air cast, we thought he was done for the season for sure. And then here he is, what, like 2 weeks later?
Two weeks.
It's incredible. And it looks like he hasn't missed a step at all. He's a free agent after this year, and I would love for him to come back. I'd love to see him grow even more in this defense.
Absolutely. No, I he's a priority re-sign for me. I think you got to keep him in this building. He's a perfect scheme fit. The coaching staff adores him, loved him as a prospect coming out, and even more so now having him in the building. You have the connection with Quinn in there as his brother as well, to have the familial connection and how cool it is to have those two guys playing on the same defense. But outside of just the coolness factor, he's playing some really, really good football, and I would really like to see him continue to grow with this coaching staff that you and I both know, Matt. All they do is create good linebackers. And so it looks like Quincy's next in line, and I'm really excited to see where it goes. Moving on, we talked about the defense and the incredible performance they had, and it's a good thing they did, because the offense took about a half to wake up. It was a pretty slow day on offense for both teams at the beginning of the game as the game went on, but Jets are definitely included in that. And I think it's important to be realistic and call things for what they are. And when players are doing great, we're going to celebrate them like we just did. And when players have some struggles, I think we need to be honest and realize that this was not a good game from Zach Wilson. It really wasn't. Granted, and this is, I think, a positive that everyone listening should really take and digest and understand, the Jets won without needing Zach Wilson to play all that great. They didn't need him to go out and be the guy who throws for 350 and four scores and leads them to a win. They didn't need him to make the fourth quarter comeback and drive them down the field like they did in Pittsburgh. He went 10 for 18 for 110 yards, no touchdowns, no picks. He got sacked twice. And I think both of the sacks were his fault, where he's got time to potentially throw, waiting for the all 22 to come out to see if anyone was open downfield. But even if so, he ran straight into, was it Rashawn Gary, I believe?
Yeah, it was Gary.
On one particular sack. And it's the pocket presence with him, I think we were really, really lacking. He had a couple of misses on top of that. And just his ability to maneuver in the pocket, I've seen so much better from him. And I think that's why I'm a little bothered. I think we were talking pregame. I think I might be a little more bothered than you are. I just know he's capable of so much more. And I know he's capable of playing at a different level. And based on what I saw in the Steelers game and his first game coming back from an injury and how he was able to navigate the pocket in that contest, to see a regression, quite honestly, and see him struggle to feel pressure, struggle to know where his lane of escape is going to be in the pocket, struggle to transition between, okay, I'm looking to throw, I'm going through my progressions, now it's time to get out and run. I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm not slightly worried, but I am very, very encouraged that Zach Wilson can throw 18 passes and complete 10 of them and only get 110 yards of offense in the passing game, and the Jets can still win by 3 scores. That's a good sign.
That's a great sign. Now, it's hard for me to really know, again, without seeing the All-22, how much of it was on Zach, how much of it was on maybe the Packers having a great game plan of stopping our receivers. I know that every single time they targeted Garrett Wilson, he was pretty much blanketed by Jair Alexander. I didn't really get to see much of anybody else between Davis and Moore. But I imagine if there were anything like Garrett Wilson, that there wasn't really much for Zach to really throw to. Well, again, that is yet to be seen. But if that's the case, yeah, then there's not much you could do throwing it. But at the same time, he still needs to have that awareness. He still needs to have that clock in his head, and he still needs to make smart decisions. And yeah, there's still a little recklessness. There's still the wild, almost reckless throws into the end zone, in the red zone, which Rares. Could have resulted in an interception. My stomach like went through my mouth when that pass went off, and we're lucky to get away with 3 points that series. But those things need to stop. We can't make those passes. We can't make those mistakes against better teams. They're going to make us pay, and we got lucky. But yeah, but again, like you said, this is a story of two halves. And I think it should be noted that we've been mentioning the second half offense and the defense, but the special teams as well. They have been lights out. This game, especially with the blocked field goal, the blocked punt. Both these plays were pivotal in really changing the momentum in this game.
Oh, yeah, that's 10 points. That's a 10-point swing off special teams, where you block a Packers field goal that was decently close. I'm pretty sure it was within 45 yards, I'm pretty sure Mason Crosby is still their kicker. That's well within his range and has been for years. So he could do that in his sleep. You get a block on the field goal, and then you force a punt, and Michael Clemens comes screaming up the middle, is able to get a hand on it, knock it down, and Will Parks is able to recover and run it in for a touchdown. That's 7 points added for the Jets and 3 points taken away by the Packers off those two special teams plays. It's absolutely crucial. They had another excellent day. Berrios was doing his thing as a returner, had a couple nice returns, got tripped up on one kick return in particular. I believe it was towards the beginning of the second half, where he's one tackle away from probably scoring. And he just gets tripped up right in the end as he's about crossing the 35 and goes down. But we know with him, all he has to do is get to that second level and he's going to be gone. We saw it later in the game where he had a rushing touchdown. Second straight game where Berrios scores off a jet sweep. And I think that it all plays together. And this was a game where eventually all three phases played in tandem. And you had the defense doing their thing from the start of the game throughout the very, very end. You had the offense, who started slow and really turned things on in the second half, really got the run game going. That's where we'll talk about next a little bit, not to get too far ahead, when the run game really started going and special teams was making plays and taking points off the board for Green Bay and putting them on the board for New York. That's about all you can hope for from your team as a whole.
Yeah, really. All three phases, offense, defense, special teams, working together. When those things are clicking, it's really hard to lose. You have to really try to lose. You have to put like a classic Jets effort in losing to lose a game where all these things are clicking. And they did not do that. They showed up, and they're showing that things have changed a little bit. We are on a 3-game winning streak. This is I can't say this enough, like how exciting this is, because this is a year when we're like, okay, that's still a rebuilding year. We're going to see maybe hopefully improvement, but we're not there yet. And they said, okay, what do you think we're there? And now they're showing they are that good. You alluded to it before. A lot of it could be attributed to our running game and the emergence of Hall.
Yeah, Breece Hall, man. I think it was after the Steelers game where I had heard from, I believe it was Michael Florid talked about this in one of his press conferences, where he had said that, pretty sure it was the Steelers game. After that game, Breece Hall comes up to him on the field when LaFleur got out of the booth and got down to the field, or maybe it was once they got into the locker room or wherever they first met up after the game. And Breece goes to him and he goes, I'm figuring it out. It's clicking. I'm getting it now. I'm seeing how the NFL is supposed to run, and it's all falling into place. And he's had two back-to-back games since then of complete domination, of being, quite honestly, probably the Jets' best offensive player in these past 2 weeks, where his ability to not only take advantage of what's in front of him with just his speed and his burst, I thought his vision has improved leaps and bounds from the first 2 weeks of the season, where he would miss some open lanes, maybe bounce outside when he shouldn't, or cut things inside when he should have bounced outside. And the feel that he has now is really just taken over. His ability to process what's happening in front of him and make a play. No better example than his long touchdown run, where I don't know if you heard, Matt, that was supposed to be a double pass.
Yeah.
And so they faked the toss to Michael Carter. They put Breece Hall in the slot in court of a little bunch set, and they have him come around. They hand him the ball. Garrett Wilson is coming on a jet motion or an orbit motion behind the play, and Breece is supposed to pitch it to Garrett, who I guess is supposed to throw to someone downfield, probably either Corey Davis or maybe Michael Carter if he leaks up, whoever it was supposed to be. But Breece Hall sits there and in the fraction of a second processes that the Packers end was a little too far out wide. He didn't know if he had room to make the pitch or if Garrett was going to be open for it. And he sees green grass right in front of him. So he makes an absolutely gorgeous cut upfield where I did not know he was capable of cutting that squarely and being able to just hit the Jets and turn it on like he did. It is an incredible cut. The type of cut that if any of us tried to do it, we'd need like serious orthopedic surgery. And we would
look like Zach Wilson in preseason.
We would look like Zach Wilson in preseason. Exactly. And he's able to get upfield. And after that, he gets out into the open. This is what we really didn't see from him early in the season that we're starting to see now. He fights for every yard he gets. He finishes the run with a stiff arm from the trailing Packers safety and gets himself into the end zone for the score. We didn't see that early in the season. Early in the season, he would have gotten tackled for a big gain, but I don't think it would have been a score. He's really starting to click, averaging 5.1 yards per carry on the season. Second straight game with over 100 total scrimmage yards. This is things are looking up for Breece. And I think this is an interesting transition when we talk about this offense as a whole. We talked about Zach struggling. We talked about the run game going on. What's going on with Elijah Moore? Because we had a little bit of drama, and I don't want to be the one to fan the flames of something that I don't think is that big of a deal, but it is worth mentioning, where Elijah Moore wasn't targeted a single time against the Packers. And like we said earlier, we're waiting to see the All-22 to see whether he should have been or not, whether he was open or not. But outside of that, Rich Samini, ESPN, makes the note of Elijah Moore getting no targets, and Elijah Moore chimes in and tweets over it himself, basically saying, I'm happy, team win, I don't want to be selfish, but his last few sentences, so I'll just stay quiet, just know I don't understand either. Not understanding why he's not getting any targets. Well, Zach Wilson only threw the ball 18 times. And I think that has a big hand in it as well. And you saw early in the game, they couldn't generate any offense to anybody. And from what it seems like from at least me on TV, Matt, I don't know about yourself, it didn't seem like anyone was too open. And that includes Elijah Moore. Yeah. So I'm curious to go back and double check this. But quite honestly, if the Jets are in a position where Elijah Moore can get no targets and Zach Wilson can throw 18 passes and they can win by 17 points, I'll take that any day of the week. A win's a win. And if they're going to be the 2019 49ers when they have to be, the fact that they have the ability to do so is really important. For Elijah Moore himself, I don't think this is going to turn into any sort of major drama. I don't think this is going to turn into anything that we have to monitor. Saleh was asked about it today in his press conference. He said they talked everything out and they're fine, and that Elijah's just a competitor and he wants to do what he can to contribute. That's literally all I think this is.
Yeah, I said as much last night too. As soon as this came out, I was like, "This, I don't mind this at all." What Elijah said is something that I feel like we're all thinking. Like, wow, yeah, we do need to get more targets to Elijah. LaFleur needs to scheme some touches for this guy because his playmaking ability is amazing. We've seen his playmaking ability both at Ole Miss and last year, and the fact that we're not kind of scheming up yards for this guy is a little ridiculous. Thanks to the stand-up guy, the exemplary specimen of a human who is Rich Lamini for after one of the greatest wins in how many years, likes to goad players into drama. This is a total non-story. I don't think there's a single teammate. I don't think there's a single fan that's gonna look at Elijah and be like, you're a bad teammate for thinking this. No, like Saleh said, the guy's a competitor. He wants to contribute. This is a special team with special players, and everybody wants to get in on the action. Everybody wants to be the guy that everybody's talking about. I don't blame him. I would want to be part of this team too. It's a special group. So yeah, a complete non-story for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. Rich Tamini is an all-pro bear poker, so I'm not worried about him finding a way to generate a headline. That's why he gets paid the big bucks by ESPN and has been for years. That's what he's good at. I don't think we need to spend any more time on that in particular. Great win by the Jets.
Super Bowl, and he'd be like, but they haven't won in this long.
Well, at this point, we could win the Super Bowl and people on PFF would still be talking about the third round pick they gave up for Elijah Vera Tucker. So we could, there's always going to be somebody that's going to have something to say. When you're the team that no one expects to win or no one thinks is capable of winning, they're always going to try and find reasons why it's not true. That's not the case anymore. The Jets are winning games. They're winning games with authority. They're winning games with statements. They're winning games because they are the better team on the field and there's no other reason to be said.
Yeah. It's true. I would just love to think about the full potential of this team, because I don't think anybody would look at this team and say, you know what, they have peaked. They have reached their potential. I think they are far from their peak and haven't even come close to their full potential. And that's a scary thought, because they're already very hard to beat and a tough out. So what does that look like and how can we get there?
That's going to be the question. And I think the good news is that I think they're on the path to getting there. And it all goes back for me, week two in Cleveland. I can't understate how important that win was for this team to give all of these young players confidence, to give all of these guys that have been on the team, either recently addition last year or rookies this year or free agents this year, and guys like Quinnen Williams that have been through the ringer of losing seasons ever since they've been drafted, to go into that road environment, to have the miracle finally happen for them. I think it's just galvanized them as a unit, and we're seeing the results of it weeks and weeks later, where they put teams to bed in the fourth quarter. They bury people in the fourth quarter. The fourth quarter Jets are absolutely real, and I really think it all started week two in Cleveland, but you're right. They haven't reached the peak. We're still waiting for the big 300-yard, four-touchdown game from Zach Wilson. We're still waiting for the two-interception game from Sauce Gardner, the three-sack game from Carl Lawson, and you know Berrios running a kickback to boot and put everything to, in order. The whole potential of this team, it might even be better than we thought before the year, looking at where their ceiling could be. They really could be about as good as they want to be. And they say, you know, Quinnen says that all the time, usually just talking about the defensive line, but I think it applies to the team as a whole. They can be as good as they want to be. And it's just a matter of putting the right pieces in place, getting the reps down, trusting in each other, and going out and executing. And they've done a really good job of that over these last handful of weeks.
They really have. I think if they can replicate what they do in the fourth quarter, in the first half of the game, I really don't see how many teams can really keep pace with that. Maybe the Chiefs and the Bills could, but not many other teams. If we can put that together for four quarters, and that's a great question. How can we do that? And I think it starts with LaFleur. It seems like he takes the whole first half and uses it to build his masterpiece of a fourth quarter. He takes everything he's learned and he builds these packages and these plays, and they just seem to work magically. It's not magic though, because he's actually taking the time and breaking down what the defense has been throwing at him all game, and he adjusts. He builds a new game plan, and it works. And a lot of that has to do with Hall too. Going back to Hall, I don't remember how many attempts he had in the first half. It wasn't many though. It seemed like he really wanted to get Zach established, and it led to a lot of stalled drives. But I think even in the first half, Hall was still breaking off a good amount of runs for decent yardage. So it's not like he wasn't productive. Maybe if we start feeding him a little earlier, maybe take that pressure off Zach early. And if Hall's really killing it out there, that'll take the pressure off the entire offense as well. And it'll open things up too, because eventually defenses are going to start stacking the box to try and stop Paul. And that will open everything up for the receiving game, for the passing game. We'll hopefully then get to see Elijah Moore, Wilson, Davis, Conklin, everybody else really start to pile on the offense then.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that's a good way to bookend this game before we get into preview and next week with the Denver Broncos. Is Breece Hall's the identity of this offense right now. He's the engine of this offense. It is not taken long at all for him to completely supplant Michael Carter as the running back one. And I think the offense goes as Breece goes. And if you can get him going early, like you said, teams will start stacking the box. We saw a deep shot to Corey Davis off play action that was wide open. It was kind of a bad throw by Zach because it was inside and short and Corey had to adjust to it. And if he leads him, it's probably his touchdown, but that's neither here nor there. We're seeing what this offense wants to be, what we talked about all summer in terms of establishing the run game, having these two good running backs, having an explosive home run hitter in Breece Hall that's going to scare the hell out of defenses, and then having all these other speed freaks on the outside to throw over their heads when they do. There's a lot of hope for this team going forward. I think you got to lean on Breece Hall until it's not working and until it seems like running Breece Hall into the dirt doesn't work. So far, it seems to keep working. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's what I always say.
Yeah, it again, we have to look at the All-22, but it seemed like Green Bay really wanted to take the ball out of the receiver's hands and were blanketing them. I don't believe I saw them blitz a lot. It looked like a lot of four-man fronts, dropping seven guys in the coverage. And I don't think there was a lot for Zach to do. But I really wish LaFleur caught onto that a little earlier and started leaning on Hall a little earlier. But again, the second half, it showed that game plan can only get you so far, because eventually Hall will beat you. And when he does, it's going to be for giant chunks and probably scores as well. He's come very close multiple times to scoring. And so these scores are going to come in chunks for him. He's been stopped on the 1 yard, maybe a handful of times already.
At least three off the top of my head.
It's going to happen more and more until teams make a concerted effort to really stop him. And then, like we were just saying, then you have to deal with the rest of the offense and Zach. And I think that's when we're going to see that game from Zach that we've all been waiting for. I don't think he's had a 300-yard game yet. Once he has that, I think we can finally say, all right, make an excuse now. What is the yep. excuse for this team that you want to make? Because now we've got Zach hitting on all cylinders. Where's the flaw?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think once that happens, you're going to see a Jets team that not a lot of other teams in the NFL are going to want to go up against. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with, quite honestly. If the defense can stack a few more performances like they had against the Packers, and the offense can get clicking and Zach can start chucking those balls downfield accurately and not just throwing prayers that Corey's going to go make him look better on, then yeah, this team's really going to come to fruition. And I'm excited to see it happen. And I'm going to be honest, Matt, leading into where we're going next, I think it's going to be this week against Denver. I am amazed. Right now, I have to go back and double check the line. But the last time I checked the line this morning, the Denver Broncos are favored by 3.5 points at home against the New York Jets. The Broncos are 2-3 on the season. They are currently playing right now on Monday Night Football against the Chargers. They're up 10-7. It's about to go to the half, but the Chargers do have the ball at the exact moment of this recording. Either way, if Denver wins, they're 3-3. If they don't win, then they're 2-4. Regardless, based on how they've played this so far this season, and based on what happened the last time the whole world saw them against the Indianapolis Colts, I don't think there's any reason whatsoever the Jets should be underdogs to the Denver Broncos at home. I think the Jets have shown, like we said, they are road warriors, that they can take on anybody in their own stadium, and they seem to thrive in that environment. And I'll tell you, I am hoping with every cell in my body that that line doesn't move, because, you know, all week Robert Saleh is going to be in the building going, you guys are 4-2 and just took out the Packers and they still think you're an underdog to these guys. Let's go show them what's for. And you're going to see a ticked off Jet squad walk into Denver and completely overwhelm the Broncos with their violence and their tenacity and their effort. We'll get into, you know, the actual specifics of how we think that'll happen next. But in terms of an attitude and a mindset and where these two teams are in relation to each other, I think there's absolutely no reason to think that the Jets can't walk into Denver and completely and totally dog walk them around their own stadium.
Yeah, I love being an underdog. As soon as So do they. It's us versus the world mentality, and they've been embracing it. Every time I see all the analysts pick the other team, it just fuels me as a fan to cheer that much harder. Even though I don't have any kind of contribution to the win at all, it just fuels me. So if it fuels me, it's got to fuel them as well. This isn't going to be another. I don't think this is going to be an easy win, even though the Broncos have a losing record right now. It is a tie game now. Chargers just tied it up. I see their defense as a lot better than Green Bay's defense. And I believe Green Bay had kind of an answer for at least a half for how to slow down our offense. And if Denver can really turn it on and stop the run as well as the pass, then we're going to have a pretty flaccid offense all day. So hopefully that, and I don't want them to use this game tonight as a springboard into our game where all of a sudden now they have momentum. But you know what? You know, I don't care, actually. I don't want to be scared of any teams anymore. I don't think we should be scared of any teams anymore. I think we can go toe-to-toe with anybody and make a good showing of it. So, you know what? Even if Denver gets hot after this game, if they win and they're riding high into the Jets game, I'm not worried. Anything can happen, but at the same time, I'm not worried because I know this team seems like they finally turned that corner and can go toe-to-toe with teams that are even riding highs.
Yeah, I think so too. Regardless of the outcome of the Broncos' current game right now, I don't think it changes the Jets' mindset one bit. I think they are in the exact same mode that they were going to be regardless, and they're going to come out ready to play. Starting with the offense, looking ahead to this game, what can the offense do to not have a repeat performance of their first half in Green Bay? You said it. The Denver defense is talented. There's a lot of good players on this defense. Defensive line is strong. Bradley Chubb, obviously, at one edge. Baron Browning's a former inside linebacker. They've moved outside and have him rushing the passer, and he's been doing really well at that. I think it's a little more natural for him. I think he started as a defensive end and eventually moved over to a linebacker, inside linebacker position. So he's doing some good work. Secondary for Denver is very, very strong. Pat Surtain is an excellent corner on the outside. Pat Surtain the second. You got Kaywan Williams as the other corner. Damari Mathis in the slot, who's a rookie. He was a guy you and I really liked coming out, Matt. I believe he was he included in our final war room as a pick, or was he just an option? Because I remember we discussed having him for a while. I don't remember if he exactly made the final cut, but either way, we both like him in the secondary. Safeties are very strong. Justin Simmons is a fantastic free safety. Kareem Jackson's done well with his transition from corner to safety as well. It's going to be a tough task overall doing anything against this defense, but I think the number one way you beat this defense is you win to the edges. I think they keep things very tight. I think especially with their base 3-4 scheme, you're going to have three down linemen generally if they're in base on the inside. When they go nickel, you're going to have Chubb and Browning on the edges, and you're going to have Draymond Jones and DJ Jones inside as the tackles. It's a tough scheme, but I don't think they have much speed overall on the unit. I think their corners are very fast. I think they have some good pass rushers, but I think it's a lot more beef and bulk than it is outright speed and fluidity. And when you look at the inside linebackers, that to me is the weak unit of this defense. And Josie Jewell, who's hurt right now, I don't know if he will be coming back for the Jets game, but even if he does, that's fine, because I do not think he's that good of a player. Alex Singleton hasn't done much this year either. They can be exploited in the middle. And I think if you get those two guys trying to chase Breece Hall to the edge, they're going to have a long day.
I wonder if Justin Simmons is going to be back. I don't know if he's playing tonight.
He is playing tonight, yes.
He is playing tonight. So
he was activated, yes.
Him being back is big for the middle of that defense, along with Kareem Jackson and Stearns. They have a very good safety group, so it's not like they're inept in the middle of the field. But yeah, those linebackers are definitely the weakness. If we can exploit them with to the outside, like you said, or even just getting them in coverage against the Hall or Carter, I think that is a favorable matchup. Or even Conklin and CJ, if we can get those guys involved, anybody that we can get up against these linebackers, exploit it. Don't stop until they can prove they can stop. And yeah, just get the run game going early. I feel like LaFleur sees like a couple plays go for short yardage or no yardage, and then he kind of just goes away from it right away. When really he just needs to keep going, just keep banging at it. It's gonna work, especially with the way Hall's playing, and even the offensive line of late has really shown that they can come together and be adequate run blockers. I still think that they're horrible in short yardage. They get absolutely no push, but you get these guys on the move. You get these guys on the move. They can trap. They can get the reach blocks. You can get Brown and his 38-year-old body running downfield, making blocks on the move. These guys can still move, and Hall and his vision, Carter and his vision, and their ability to make people miss, they'll pull it out for decent yardage. I would pretty much get rid of all inside runs. I know you got to keep them honest every now and then, but I feel like they're just non-starters for this offense. But yeah, like, attack the outside, attack the edge. These guys, Carter and Hall, prove that they can hit that edge fast and hard. They can get those cutback lanes fast and hard, and they'll get you the yards you need to really get this offense started quickly and really free up Zach to maybe do some play action or to do some zone reads or some option plays. There's a lot of things that they could do. I just want to see a little bit more ingenuity, creativity from LaFleur to start the game and not just go through the motions for two quarters.
I agree. Yeah, I think it would be nice to see, you know, LaFleur open up the playbook a little bit earlier in the game. And I'm going to be honest, it is kind of concerning that those are the plays that are scripted usually are the first 15 plays of the game for most offenses. And I'm pretty sure the Jets included, where that's your game plan. That's your, this is what we saw on film. This is what we're trying to establish. This is what we're trying to set up for later in the game. And then, as you said, as the game goes on and LaFleur gets an idea for how things are going, I do give him credit for adjusting and being, you know, able to alter the course and see where the game is headed and really flow in one direction and not just ram your head in the wall trying to do the same thing. But I would like to see some things a little earlier in the game, try and generate some explosives and get out to a lead. And as we've said for a long time, Matt, when the Jets get out to a lead, that's how this team and especially this defense is built to play. And you really saw that pay off for the Jets after they got out to that 10-3 lead. They got up by a touchdown. Then you saw Green Bay having to throw the ball more, and that's when the defensive line really came home. So I'm hoping to see that as well. One other thing I'm specifically going to be looking for, and it's something I really don't know why the Jets haven't done before, especially now with Zach Wilson back, but maybe this is the week that changes. When I'm looking at the Broncos cornerback group, it reminds me a lot of our own, because you have Pat Surtain the second on the outside, who's 6'2", 200 plus pounds, big, long, strong, physical. And you have Kaywan Williams on the other outside corner, who's a lot smaller. He's 5'9", 190 something pounds, 185 pounds. This is official listing. A lot smaller, shiftier of a player. That would be more similar to a DJ Reed, while Pat Surtain is more similar to a Sauce Gardner. And just it happened in the Green Bay game, where you get a tall receiver matched up on DJ Reed. And I think that's like his only weakness, is when he's going against guys that have size, because he just gets outbodied and you can throw back shoulders on to a bigger receiver and let him go up and get it. So when I'm looking at this matchup, I see Pat Surtain as one outside corner. I see Kaywan Williams as the other. And as far as I know, I don't think Pat Surtain is traveling or shadowing anybody right now. And I'm pretty sure that he's playing on a side and they got Kaywan playing on the other side. Even if
Kaywan's in the slot, actually, and Darby, I believe, is on the outside.
Is Darby on the outside? Darby's on IR. Okay. Darby was on the outside. Oh, okay. And okay. Cause okay. I was going to say, cause sense. I swear I saw Kaywan playing on the outside last week in the Colts game. But anyway, so if Darby's on IR and Kaywan Williams is one of their outside corners, even if not, because I still think you can do this from the slot with slot fades, I want Corey Davis on Kaywan Williams, because I think you can just get some free balls with back shoulders by out manning Kaywan Williams and letting Corey Davis, who's having a really, really good season, be the guy that kind of leads this passing game and takes things over. And I go back to the Jets and why I don't understand why they don't try and target smaller corners with back shoulders more, because Zach Wilson was deadly with it at BYU. That was pretty much his get out of jail free card whenever he didn't know what else was going on, is, oh, well, I'm going to have Dax Milne or Gunnar Romney on the sideline. And if they're ahead of their guy, I'll put it out in front. And if they're even, I'll throw it back shoulder and they'll adjust and body box out whoever's covering them. I think the Jets can do the same thing. We saw it happen against the Packers when Alan Lazard got on DJ Reed, as I was saying before, where DJ Reed gets matched up on Lazard and Rodgers is able to throw a back shoulder about as perfect of a ball as you could hope over right over the top of Reed's head. And Lazard's able to catch it over his hands. And then we had a back shoulder for a touchdown where he gets matched up on LaMarcus Joyner, Alan Lazard again, LaMarcus Joyner being a 5'9 safety and Rodgers being able to put it outside where Joyner couldn't get to it. Lazard can adjust and it's a 25 yard touchdown, I believe, at least 20 yards. I don't remember the exact yardage. I think the Jets can do something similar. And especially if you're going to have Kaywan Williams as an outside corner, I want Corey Davis on him every single time. And not that I don't think Garrett Wilson can, you know, do well, or Elijah Moore will do well, or anything in between. But when Zach needs get out of jail free card. When Zach needs the, okay, things are breaking down, what am I going to look for? Who am I going to trust? I think he's looking for Corey right now. And so I want Corey Davis on the best possible matchup for him that he could get. I really think this could be a big game for Corey.
How often does the receiver really get, or the offense really get to choose who their matchup is, though?
Well, see, and that's the thing, is if they're playing sides, then they get to every time. And like, yeah, the Jets play sides. And that's why DJ Reed's been victim to it a handful of times, because teams know, well, if we want to throw down the field and we want to try and let our big receivers go and win a tough matchup, they're not doing it on 6'3 Sauce Gardner, but it makes sense for them to do it on 5'9 DJ Reed. Where if the Broncos are traveling their corners, my thought would be logically, Pat Surtain's going to be on Garrett Wilson. Yeah. He's their best corner.
Just like Alexander was.
And Jair, exactly. So Jair Alexander in Green Bay trails Garrett in the slot. I think if Pat Surtain is trailing, he's going to likely trail Garrett. Garrett's likely going to be in the slot for a good bit of reps, and that's where you're going to have Surtain in the slot. If Surtain's in the slot and Williams is playing, then he's going to be on one or, you know, either the left or right, somewhere on the outside. I think you can get into the right matchup. Even if not, I think you can motion to it. I think if it starts, you know, you start on the wrong side and you need to flip something over, you send Corey in motion, or you motion, you know, maybe you put him in a stack alignment with him behind Elijah Moore, and then you motion Elijah Moore to the other side and it leaves one-on-one. There's ways to get into favorable matchups. And it's regardless of what the Broncos defense does, the only way the Broncos defense avoids this is by having Surtain trail Corey Davis, which I don't think they would do to start off. And if they do, then you're leaving Kaywan Williams to deal with Garrett Wilson and Elijah Moore all day. And I don't think that's going to be, I don't think he can keep up. I think Garrett Wilson can body him out just as well as Corey would be able to, while also being able to run, you know, get open just with speed and separation. I think there's some really good matchups to be had against this secondary, and I'm hopeful this is the week the Jets start finally trying to take advantage of what they have in front of them, know their opponent, and pick apart matchups.
It'd be nice. It's going to be a hard task, though. This group is very talented, even more so if Simmons is back.
Yeah, it's not going to be anything easy. Simmons obviously makes things difficult, but I do think that there is an opportunity for some explosive passes if you get into the right matchups. Looking on the defensive side of the ball, defensive line has to be licking their chops. Garrett Bowles, the Broncos left tackle, is officially out for the year. He is not going to be coming back. They have Calvin Anderson starting in his place. Their regular backup, Tom Compton, is out tonight against the Chargers. This is a offensive line that could very easily be exploited. And if I hear someone's left tackle is out and their backup isn't playing, we'll see what happens on Sunday in terms of whether Compton can start or not. But you know whose bell I should going to start ringing, Matt? Carl Lawson. This is the Carl Lawson wakes up and starts filling up the stat sheet and not just the film sheet with all of his great plays. And so if I'm looking at this Broncos offense, knowing they have potentially a leaky offensive line, and a really good group of receivers with a good quarterback in Russell Wilson, even if he hasn't played to it to times varying degrees so far this year, I think you replicate the same matchup you just had against the Packers. I don't think the Jets blitzed Rodgers much. If they did, it was maybe sending one or extra, you know, five rushers instead of four, but it was a lot of stunts up front. Four-man rushes and, you know, letting those front four really take advantage and control the game. I think you do the exact same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Get those guys up front going against an injured and bewildered offensive line for the Broncos. If we can get them going like they did against Green Bay, it's going to be tough sledding for Russell Wilson. Yes, Russell Wilson is very athletic and can extend plays, but so could Rodgers. And we still were able to contain him and his legs. And we've done the same before too with Jackson and with Baltimore. We were able to contain him as well for the most part. So I'm not really worried about the wheels on Wilson. I think we can contain them as well as we've done everybody else. But yeah, if we can get that pressure And then it's just up to our secondary again to really do their magic. And if we can get that pressure, we'll probably force some turnovers as well.
I think so too. And that's going to lead directly into my last point for defense. And I know this is something the Jets can do because they did it week one in Baltimore. And I would really like to see them, you know, have this be the week where they can do it again. When they get in third down situations, I want Sauce traveling with Courtland Sutton. I do not want to risk the third and nine back shoulder with Courtland Sutton on DJ Reed that goes for 25 yards. I don't. And I think that knowing the Broncos and knowing Russell Wilson and how he likes to attack, when he's throwing deep, he throws a lot of slot fades. When you had Tyler Lockett, that's a really good way to do it. And he likes throwing deep balls down the boundary. If I get Courtland Sutton on DJ Reed, if I'm Russell Wilson and it's third and nine, that's where I'm going with the ball. I predetermine it. I don't care. You know, get him going down the field, throw it back shoulder, let Sutton adjust, and he'll go out and he should, in theory, be able to body up on a smaller corner like DJ Reed. I don't want this to be the crap on DJ Reed show because that's not what I'm trying to say. I just think this is the only thing that he struggles with because as someone that's, you know, a shorter stature cornerback, there's only so much he can physically do. It's a natural disadvantage, and so you want to put your players in the best positions to succeed. I like the idea of DJ Reed on KJ Hamler or Jerry Jeudy a lot more than I like the idea of DJ Reed on Courtland Sutton. And so I would love to see them trust Sauce and say, okay, we don't need to do it the whole game because I know they play a lot of zone, you know, early on, and if you get beat with some back shoulders and some early downs, it's going to happen. There's even more reason to, on third down when things matter most, put Sauce on Sutton and let him take away that just body up back shoulder deep ball. I think it's, you know, just like on offense, take advantage of what you have in the secondary, the Jets secondary and the Broncos secondary being very similar in terms of their composition. I think this is another game where it's the same thing the other way, where try your best defensively to not give up free plays to big receivers because they're going against short corners.
Has Sauce traveled at all, or is he
traveled still? Andrews week one.
All right. So it's not impossible. It's not unheard of to for them to go away.
No, but only on third down. That's the thing is that So on first and second, we have Sauce as the left corner. DJ Reed is the right corner on their standard package on early downs. But on third down, they put Sauce on Andrews. And he would move inside and they would have Carter go and play the other outside corner. Or they would have Bryce Hall come in where we saw for those couple of reps when they went in their dime sets and he would play on the outside. I think this is another game where you do something similar. And if you need to go into a dime set, well, Sauce had to come out for a little bit for seemingly a head injury, but he seemed like he was able to finish and is fine. We don't have to worry from there. And Brandon Echols came in the game again, second time now this year, where he's came in and didn't skip a beat and immediately got tested on a deep ball and probably should have had an interception and just wasn't able to quite adjust to the ball right and really kind of dropped it, but covered the deep route absolutely perfectly on Alan Lazard. So if we have to move Sauce, even if Sutton goes in the slot and you got to move Sauce to the slot, I'm comfortable with Echols on the outside. I think Carter too is playing good enough ball to where we can trust him if he needs to do some outside reps. I'm worried so much about Courtland Sutton and Russell Wilson just throwing back shoulders all day long that I'm going to do anything I can to stop that. I think Sauce is the perfect guy for it.
Yeah. Between his physicality, his size, and his fluidity, just like he showed against Lazard and being able to change direction on a dime and really drive on the ball. He's the perfect matchup for Sutton. But you know what? Even if he's matched up against Jeudy, even as shifty as Jeudy is, I think that Sauce is fluid enough to even hang with him. But again, yeah, you're right. Him on Sutton on those third downs, prevent the back shoulder, prevent him from really using his physicality against Reed or anybody else. Take advantage of the matchups you can handle.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what the best football teams do. When the NFL is a matchup league, and it is always going to be. So if you're not playing matchup football, it's going to make things a lot harder for yourself to just trust that anybody and anybody is going to be able to guard anybody and anybody else, regardless of any physical skill sets or makeup or anything like that. I think you have to do what you can to make it easier for your players to succeed. And I think this is the perfect game to really get that opportunity to do so.
Absolutely.
All right, Matt, let's get into game picks before we get on out of here. I'll let you go ahead and start. I'm still kind of figuring out where exactly I'm going to put my my score.
All right. Well, I have been getting trounced lately with my predictions. But at the same time, every time I think they're going to lose, they still somehow pull it out. So, you know what? I'm not going to change my my reverse jinx. And I'm going to say that it's going to be 13-9 Seattle. I think they're going to show up on defense. They're going to have – they're going to start throwing problems at our offense that we're not going to be able to handle. They'll force Zach to throw into tough situations. And they're going to have an answer for Hall. And it's just going to be tough sledding all day, at most a couple field goals. But for the most part, it's not going to be easy for us to really get anything going on offense. And then for defense, I think they're going to play very well against this Broncos offense. But in the end, I think just a few plays here and there will be enough, especially since our offense won't be able to handle it. So, yeah, 13-9 Broncos.
All right. 13-9 Broncos. That is a definitely interesting prediction. I appreciate the reverse jinx as a well-known jinx myself. I always know trying to use our powers for good. It doesn't always go the way we hope, but sometimes it works out. I'm on the completely different end of the spectrum as you, Matt. I think this is going to be a dominant Jets win. I think the Jets are going to walk in to Mile High Stadium in Denver, and they are going to take things over from the very first whistle until the very end. I think the Broncos are having a close game right now. It's 13-10 half with the Broncos leading over a division rival in the Chargers. You got a short week, which makes things more difficult when you're going against a team that is, you know, a division rival. And then you get the very next week, a short week is only going to make it even harder when you don't have as much time to rest and get prepared. On top of that, they're breaking in some new starters on the offensive line, and that's always going to make things difficult. And I'm just looking at this entire game as a whole with how the Jets are playing right now, with how they play on the road, how they've been able to just get all the pieces really sorted together. And I remember last year, what happened the last time the Jets went to the to Denver in week 3 last year? They got shut out 26-0. I guarantee you Robert Saleh didn't forget that. I guarantee you Quinnen Williams didn't forget that. I think these Jets are pissed. I think this is a revenge game in disguise for the New York Jets. And I haven't seen enough out of Russell Wilson quite yet to say everything's clicking and everything's going well. They don't have Javonte Williams. They're down their left tackle. We don't know what the deal's going on with their potential backup tackles. And their defense is strong, but it's being routinely put in some really tough positions by their offense. I think overall, our defense does matches up very, very well with this Broncos offense. I think the Jets are going to make a big, big, big statement. 28-3 Jets. Whoa. I think 28-3 Jets. I think they completely shut down this offense. I'm not worried about the Broncos one run game one bit. I think as long as Sauce can get on Sutton on those key third downs, that it's going to be really hard to convert any first downs for the Broncos offense, keep the chains moving. I think Carl Lawson's going to explode. I think Quinnen Williams is an all pro. And I think the offense led by Breece Hall is probably going to have another slower start. But as the game gets going, they're going to wear that team out. And if the Denver offense is not doing anything, that defense is going to wear out even faster. You're going to see the classic Jets fourth quarter explosion. And I think this is going to be an absolutely huge win. Sit the Jets at 5-2 after 7 weeks, 28-3 Jets. I think this is going to be domination.
That's a lofty prediction. I don't know if I could sign off on that, but I would love to see it.
I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, man. We are drunk off Kool-Aid, and as a very, very proud honorary Tennessee volunteer over this past weekend, getting the chance to go into Knoxville and experience Tennessee Alabama live, probably the best football game I'll ever see in my life in person. I'm feeling something with these underdogs, and there's something about revenge, and there's something about getting a team that just had a tough fight where Alabama struggled with A&M the week before, and then they have to go into Knoxville. And was it a complete and total domination by the Volunteers? No. But I also think that the Broncos aren't quite at the level in the NFL that Alabama is in college football. And maybe it's not the perfect exact comparison, but I see a lot of emotion hidden in this game for the New York Jets. And I don't see that same on the other side for the Denver Broncos. I think at the end of the day, that's going to make all the difference. I do not want to be anyone playing a pissed off New York Jets team right now. And I think Denver's in for it.
I hope you're right. I would love to see it. If we can go 5-2, that would really, if we could put up that many points against this defense, that gives me hope against a defense like the Bills defense, because that's another outstanding defense. If we could, it shows that we can move it in a tough situation. I'm doubtful, but that'd be really cool to see.
Yeah, I really think they can do it. They gave up 32 points to the Raiders.
Okay, well, see, the division games, though, are a little funky.
And this game's a little funky because the Jets are pissed. This game's
a little funky, too. I thought you meant this Charger game. But, yeah, anything can happen. It's football. Let's get out there. Let's show what we can do.
That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping the Jets prove me right. I'm fully on board with this team. I think they are clicking at just the right time. I think their important pieces are rounding into form. And I really think that it's just the start of the ride. And when Robert Saleh talked about it, you know, early in the season, that when it clicks and when it happens and everyone starts taking off, you know, you'll know it when you see it. I've seen it. And I think they're there. I think this is going to be a fourth win in a row. I can't wait for next Sunday. I think it's going to be a joy to watch as a fan of the New York Jets.
Let's ride.
Yeah, Jets country, let's ride. That's how I'm going to end this one. Thank you all so much for listening. That has been the show this week. Matt, go ahead and tell the people where they can find you, and we'll get on out of here.
Matt, you can find me at Zazzy Jets.
And you can find me at AndrewGolden_17. And make sure you're also following the show at OKD Podcast. Thank you one more time again so much for tuning in and listening. Jets are 4-2. Who would have guessed? Look at us. I feel like the Paul Rudd meme right now. Hey, look at us. Who would have thought? I think they're going to keep it going. I think this is only the beginning. Jets country, let's ride.